like to welcome you to our regular meeting this afternoon, November 15th, 2023. If you would stand with the pledge, please, and along with the
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just wanted to bring up one thing, just get some guidance from the board on a time for the second solar work session under unfinished business.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Can I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Wright, second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Then we will go on with the agenda as adopted. The county administrator.
Yep, actually just got a few new employees to report this evening. So yes, we have a few new employees to announce. So in the planning and zoning department, we have a new planner GIS technician, Joanna Lettinen, thank you. She started November 6th. Patrick McGee started for the Emergency Services Department at EMT BLS. He also started November 6th. Holly Hillard started for Social Services as a Human Services Assistant 3. She started November 6th. And then last but not least, Kiara Bowling, Social Services, started as a Benefit Program Specialist. She started November 6th. So I'd like to welcome them to the staff. And again, we just have kind of a short county administrator's report this evening. Just a reminder, this coming Monday, November 20th at 8:30 a.m., we have the elected officials breakfast meeting, which is gonna be held at the Fluvanna County Library. December 6th, we have a regular meeting starting at 5 p.m. December 20th, it says 7 p.m., we actually have to check that because I think for the next two meetings we have work sessions scheduled, and so I need to coordinate with Dr. Gretz about December 6th, because on the budget calendar we have planned a 7 p.m. work session with the schools as a preliminary budget discussion, and then on the December 20th meeting, looking at the budget calendar, we start doing nonprofit presentations. And then Wednesday, January 7th at 5 p.m., we would have our organizational and regular meeting of the new board.
January 7th?
January 3rd. I think I was looking at 7 p.m. and saying the 3rd. So, yeah.
Okay, yeah, any questions?
My only question is if, and with all full respect to the board members who are rotating off, why wouldn't the schools wait to do that until January when the board that they're appealing to, the new board, is in existence?
I mean, we could. I mean, I would just say historically, we've always kind of, just because we're kind of, we kind of ramp up to like the budget time and doing lots of budget meetings and stuff like that, we've historically done something in December as just kind of a preliminary update for what budget items are. But I mean, if we wanted to do that, like I said, I would just have to coordinate with Dr. Gretz. I mean, the board could certainly do that.
I would agree that we could if the new members are here.
Well, there's some go-getters that are here too.
Yeah. if they could be arranged that way.
Now, are you saying arrange to have the new ones included for December or
wait until January?
Yeah, the only thing, like I said, we can certainly do that. So in January, in the first meeting in January, is the organizational meeting. So we technically don't have any work sessions scheduled for the first meeting. And then the second meeting in January, I think we have other nonprofit presentations as well scheduled for that one for a work session. But let me speak to Dr. Gratz and see what we can work out and see what
we can do. Yeah, you said some nonprofits are coming also.
Yeah.
I understand trying to put it somewhere where you have space, understanding January starts budget season, all the nonprofits. I just, and systematically thinking, new board members, I feel like, should be a part of a conversation. They can Zoom or show up, but they can't be a part of the conversation or ask questions.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I'll coordinate with him, and like I think we can see what we can do, see what we can move around, and make that happen.
Okay. Yep. I had originally said I was not going to be able to attend on Monday. I should be able to attend.
Oh, you can? Okay.
Okay. All right, now I'd like to open our first public comment. Anyone would like to speak to the board, would you come to the lectern, give your name and address? Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
James Schoenster. I live at 843 Jefferson Drive in Palmyra. And the signs are gone, but I'm still here. And I really want to come and ask each of the current board members for input. I was unsuccessful in my bid to join the Board of Supervisors, but I still want to serve the county. I think you've had a chance to learn a bit about what I'm about, what I care about, what my skills and abilities might be. So I want to hear from each of you where you think I may best serve. I may not listen to all of that input, but I value it very greatly, especially from our two board members who will be retiring. I don't want the county to lose the knowledge and experience that both of you have, and I will take your input extra seriously. So thank you. That's all I wanted to say, and I look forward to hearing from you. I think each of you know how to get in touch with me via phone or email. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're not supposed to talk to them, supposed to talk to them, I'll talk about it. James said, as the polls closed at Palmyra the other night, and Tony was standing right there, he said, I just want you all to know, no matter how this goes, I'm going to be a part of Fluvanna and serving where I can. And I told him the other night, I said, I remember sitting here and going, who's that guy who keeps showing up every time and at every meeting, and why would he care enough to understand our budget and the how things went? So I commend you for your efforts and stick around.
Right.
I may take advantage of the YouTube a bit more than being here in person, but I'll be paying attention.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak to the board? If not, I will close the first public comment, and I would think that we would welcome our new board members. I see Mr. Hodges in the audience, and I've already communicated to Mike. So I'm looking forward to where am I going to be? Now I'm going to be at home.
Yeah, hold on.
If
she
I show up here, y'all send me home. Hey, if I show up, y'all say, Moselle, go home. Okay.
Ma'am, there's no way on God's green earth I'm saying that to you.
All right, now we will move on. We don't have any, we don't have a public hearing, we don't have any actions, we have appointments. Before we get to the appointments, we had lots of people signed up for Thomas Jefferson. And as I was, I had brought this up before, but none of you all agreed with me. I just don't think the value of the entire resume is necessary. I think portions of your resume you could include, which would help us select you for that particular board or commission. Another thing is, I went back to look up what is the mission of Thomas Jefferson's planning commission, and I don't think we have any of that on the website. When they do the application, they just check off, there's no explanation. I mean, it would make your application huge if you put the job description of each. And I think a lot of those applications come from individuals who may have gone through the leadership class. And if that's the case, then usually they have heard from most of those boards and commissions, I think. But it just seems like it's not enough information about what they are joining And all people that have been on boards have done very well, and I'm not criticizing anybody. But I'm not sure that people know the commitment to that board or commission.
Well, there are a lot of really good candidates.
Yeah. I've never seen this many.
As the sitting member for the Board of Supervisors on the TJPDC Commission, I've been on it for a number of years. I can't say that, you know, Mr. Smith, who's the incumbent, is not able to be here tonight because he's actually presenting to the Virginia State Governors Association or whatever about affordable housing on behalf of the TJPDC. I know he's been very invaluable to its functioning and its success over the years. So I like a lot of people on this list right here, but I think Mr. Smith brings invaluable experience and wealth of knowledge and desires to continue to serve. So I would certainly be in favor of nominating him.
And just one thing is, there's a gentleman in the audience that I don't recognize, so he may be on this list.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. I don't want to take away from anybody talking about it. I just wanted to make that notice and just speak after on stuff.
So do we have a candidate in the audience who would like to speak to us? Yes. Come forward, sir.
That might be him.
Yep.
Good evening.
A lot of pressure, they called you out.
Hello again, everybody. I kind of in my introductory email back to everybody, I told that I was planning on serving more, just getting my feet wet with the Library Board of Trustees, and I can't say how valuable that has been for me, just to be more involved, you know, with, and I saw Cindy was on with Hayden and with everybody else, and when this appointment came up where I was interested, I did a lot of, like Moselle and Ms. Booker had talked about, kind of some background information, looked at the commitment, like the time with Thursday, see Mr. O'Brien was serving on the board, also with Mr. Smith, you know, even just a little bit that I knew about him, I know just the impact that he had. But in saying that, I believe that I also can bring some skills with my experiences, both with currently, you know, on serving on a commission and board for Fluvanna, but also with my experience now being more involved with government, obviously with my teaching experience and my overall background kind of information, as well as just wanting to be more involved with Fluvanna, as you know, I've kind of made my point with trying to be more involved. That's really it. Like I said, I really just wanted to put, you know, more or less my life on a piece of paper and let, you know, everybody here review it, just look at my qualifying experiences, and if I'm, you know, if the board so chooses to say that I can, you know, fill with that role, I definitely know that I have the, you know, the bandwidth and the commitment to do it. But at the same time as well, I'm not going to just try to steamroller bulldoze without recognizing all the good contributions that have come before me to serve on this board, both, you know, past, present, and with future with it. So, I mean, outside of that, if, you know, I want to hijack this, if there's any questions or anything about me, but that's really all that I wanted to come in front of you all with, just to kind of give that information.
And I apologize for jumping the gun a little bit there, Mr. Arlo, and I do appreciate your email and your being here. I think it means a lot when you come and let us know and talk to us. I do appreciate that. I hate to pick a side, you know.
Because at the end of the day, I mean, the board needs to function, whether I'm the best candidate, whether it's somebody else, whether it's Mr. Smith. So at the end of the day, I mean, we're all going to sleep well at night because that board has to move forward, has to do all the good work that it's doing, involving with all the key stakeholders involved. That's, I mean, it's outside, obviously, just with Savannah County, all like the projects that are have with, you know, the housing development environment, and all of the other work. So like, the board needs to go on. I'll be remiss if I didn't think that I could contribute to it as well without, you know, going to try to be
involved. Certainly, whatever the vote is now, I would say please continue to apply.
Oh, no, like I said, I definitely will. Like I said, I'm now in my, this last email, like I said, comfortable enough now to kind of really be on the offensive and really more involved with Savannah, because I feel like I can give that back with everything that I have been going on to contribute to everybody.
You're in your prime now.
I feel like I am. And I don't want it to go to waste.
Always good to see you, Mr. Harlow.
I So yeah. You too, Mr. Sheridan.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember back to when we were calling around trying to get people to sign up.
Now
we get a book to read about everybody. Mm-hmm.
And quality candidates.
That's the best part about it.
Yes.
And what's tough too is I know that several of these candidates have expressed interest as well, and you know, they bring their names up. Mm-hmm. You know, it really begs the question of, you know, the importance of rotation, and I'm a fan of that myself personally.
Yeah.
I just know how invaluable Mr. Smith has been to the APDC, and how active he really is. And so, you know, sometimes you have members who are, you know, for whatever reason they come on and they participate for a period of time. They contribute or don't contribute, speaking as a representative for the DJBDC, I can certainly say he has been very essential to their function.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
I'd just say, so actually in 2011, I left that position to come on the Board of Supervisors and appointed Keith. So that means 2011, I mean, he's been there 12 years. Mm-hmm. And as much as I love debating his positions sometimes, especially on a show, he knows the stuff and his heart's in it. And I'd have a hard time not voting to support him again. What's how long are the terms?
It's 26.
3 years. Yeah.
3 year terms?
Yeah.
No, this right here is a 2 year term.
I'm 24.
Oh, no.
26.
It's a 3 year term.
24.
Oh, yeah, 20. Yeah. You're right.
All 26.
Yep. Yeah.
I'd say let's give him 3 more years and then see what we think about him.
Okay. Any other
discussion?
Any other in the audience?
Everybody look for me. Okay,
everybody.
I will second Mr. O'Brien's motion.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. O'Brien and a second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. So Mr. Keith Smith will continue to represent us. Thank you.
And Mr. Harlow, I'll certainly reach out to the TJBEC and see if there's some opportunities for you to contribute over there that aren't necessarily in this position.
Right. Okay, thank you. All right, now we have a presentation.
Manager, we just have this Social Services Board.
Oh, yes, that's
There's one, I think it might be an easy decision.
It'll be a quick one.
Who is that running down the aisle and turned around?
You're calling him up. Go. You got someone to take.
Okay, Social Services. We have one person. She's already on Social Service Board, and she would like to continue.
I make a motion we keep Martha Brown Snyder.
And I second that.
All right. We have a motion from Ms. Fairchild and second by Mrs. Ingram. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. And Ms. Martha Snyder will be continue to work on the Board of Supervisors. All right. Now, we're ready for B. You ready now, Mr. Spitzley?
Whenever you're ready.
All right. Come right on. And we're going to do Fluvanna County Facilities and Dogs. Aaron Spitzer, Director of Parks and Recreation, and our attorney, Dan Gibson, will also be part of this presentation.
I'm going to work with Dan on the presentation. I'm going to try to do the first part. He's going to work on the second part, and then we're going to work on questions together. We have ACO Strong online. She's here to answer questions, and I'm not sure if Captain Peterson is online or in here, but I knew he had some input too on this. So I'm here to speak about Fluvanna County facilities and dogs, especially Pleasant Grove Park and our trails and open space at the park. So over the past several years, we've had a lot of incidents with dogs being loose on our trails, biting individuals. They're reported to me, but not every time, to the Sheriff's Department. These individuals are stopped and coming to our park because of this issue. We're getting complaints about dogs on trails without being in view of the owner. This is where a lot of the bites are coming in effect. Many complaints are at the soccer fields while the kids are practicing because it's open. I'm probably getting ready to take care of that problem with the fence around the soccer field so we can actually keep dogs out of there. The library has a big issue. So we have two trail entrances coming out of the back of the library. A lot of people are letting their dogs out of their car as soon as they get there off a leash, and then they're going over and at people visiting the library, kids, adults, stuff like that. And it's causing some issues with, I think the sheriff's department's getting calls on that. We don't see that as much because we're up at the park, but the sheriff's department is right beside of the library, so I think Ms. Strong gets a lot of calls about that. We've also had, I know we weren't really going to try to touch on this, but we've had dogs going into buildings too in the county. And people that are already in the buildings are concerned about the dog being in the building while they're in there viewing and stuff. So we're having...
They're not service dogs.
They are not service dogs, and they're not emotional support dogs. They're a dog on a leash, kind of coming in to a building. We have no rules on that I know of. So we are, and this has been getting progressively worse since COVID. A lot more people have been using our parks. We have a lot of bike stuff going on in our parks now that we haven't in the past. We have a lot more hikers. We have a disc golf course in our park that we've really never had. Soccer and baseball and all the sports are up. So there's some issues with some dogs, and I'm a dog owner. So I feel it too, you know what I'm saying? But you got to look out. If it's me, I've got to look out for the safety of the people that are in the park, using the park.
And I know that our cross-country team had an issue a few years back. Quite a few of them.
They're running into, as they're on the trails, we're trying to block the trails off. But, yeah, they're running into them. So currently, we have a policy, not an ordinance. So our current policy states the dogs must be on a leash at all times in designated areas except in section 2.3, which we'll get to. Like 2.2, pets and horses are not permitted on athletic fields. That's been hard to do for the soccer fields currently because there's no fence. We try to, but when we get a fence, we can put signs up for that to take care of that issue. The next slide. So 9.2.3 is our current dog leash requirements for the park, our policy. Never off-leash areas is horse trail parking. Well, that leads into one of our trails, the birding trail. And I can tell you, people love to take their dogs on the birding trail off the leash because it's a nice open trail field. That's a hardy one. I've mentioned the multi-purpose soccer fields. We've had a couple people put their dogs in our baseball fields. We've kind of got that out of the way since I have more staff at the park. We're able to control that. Say, look, you can't have your dogs in our ball fields. It tears them up. The playgrounds, it's kind of hard. The playground's open, and it's right beside the soccer fields and a lot of our trails in there. So it's hard to keep dogs. They go from one area to another, you know, and it's hard to keep them from being out of the playground when out on a leash with a bunch of kids there. And dogs are friendly. I can't say they aren't, but a kid touches the dog the wrong way and it could be an issue. And that's what we are concerned about. So we have several off-leash areas in the park. A lot of them are in the front of the park. So as you come into the park on the right, the big field right there by 53, that's the off-leash area. The upper field, basically where we park for the carnival, that's all off-leash up through, all through there.
Isn't that the rodeo area?
Well, so the whole front field where we park.
Yeah, the front area, but that, behind there.
And then we go on the other side of the road, and then you have people will park in the carnival, where we have our carnival set up, and let their dogs run over into what I call the rodeo field, where we have our rodeo for the carnival. That's open field. So some of the problems with that is our soccer fields are right over the hill from that. So as they're walking through there, they're not leashing their dogs going down the hill into the trails. They go that way. And they let them run around up there. The dog park has off-leash areas currently all around it. We have 3 dog pens. And the sandy beach is an off-leash area. So I think the next slide kind of shows you a map. So I drew a red line on our map from our current policy. And it says anything east of the ball fields is off-leash. So that's kind of hard. If you see it, it's kind of hard to tell where that's actually at, in a way. If you draw your line straight down, it makes it tough. So I think the next...
I'm sorry, I'm confused. So now, say it again about anything...
East of the baseball fields, you're allowed to have your dog off-leash technically right now. Anything west, you're supposed to have leashed dogs on our trails. Not including the open area that's out front.
So the red line is,
The red line's kind of like, yeah, it's our ball fields. It's the middle of our ball fields, that trail that goes straight back. So we use, I think it's Hayden's Trail. So we use Hayden's Trail as our marker, kind of for the off-leash. Next slide. So with our current policy, we're really unable to force any offenses with dogs being off-leash. The only thing I can really do is trespass somebody. That's the only authority we kind of have currently, if we have an issue at the park. Not something you really want to do to people, you know what I'm saying? You'd rather be able to talk to them and help them, but that's the current policy we have. And we were thinking about maybe an ordinance or something added to the current ordinance that y'all just did in September to help with this. And I think the next slide I kind of showed a map. So I made a new red line. So it'd be my thing if we would use east of the red line, which is the dog park, and there's 2.8 miles of trails in there. If we would use that for off-leash area, that gives you open area to run your dog over the hill. Where you at the parking lot, and then it gives you the sandy beach. Like I said, roughly 2.8 miles of trail. And I think that could save a lot of problems. And the reason why we chose that, I met with Ms. Strong, and it's a place where we can put a sign on a trail entrance, one place where you need to leash your dog. If we would do it anywhere else, you'd have to have multiple signs on multiple trails. Leash your dog here, unleash here. This is a place where on our trail we can say one spot. You have to leash your dog. These trails go to there.
You can kind of see where the green trail.
They all go to one spot. Yeah. That's why that spot was chosen. If that makes any, I don't know if that makes sense. The next slide I think is we're going into Dan stuff.
Sure. So basically, Aaron and Deputy Strong came to me and asked, under Dillon rule, is it possible for to draft an ordinance to handle this issue for dogs running, where they're really not under the control of their owner? Because right now there's a sign at the different entrances that says controlled dog off-leash trail. And I spend a lot of time running the trails and biking the trails, and I've seen a lot of dogs that they're not really under the control of their owner. One time I was running down Beach Grove and a lady had 5 pit bulls with her. It's kind of hard to control 5 dogs at once. So I stopped, let her dog, get her dogs back under, pulled them all by their collar, and then ran around. So there's definitely been instances where if you had a leash law, maybe you could, kind of help with something that could happen. Something bad could happen with the wrong dog or the wrong interaction. So I looked around at basically different localities that had leash laws and looked at their ordinances. And so the ordinance, which is in draft form, is just kind of for discussion tonight, is basically saying that no dog shall run unrestricted as defined in this section on county property. And so that'd be all the county parks, the area around here, Pleasant Grove, Fort Union, basically not just limited to Pleasant Grove. The way it's written now, it'd be all county properties. Now, if you wanted to limit it to just Pleasant Grove and the library, you could. But right now, I have it as all county properties. And so what unrestricted means is not under the control of the owner, either by a leash, cord, chain, or primary enclosure. An electronic device does not qualify. So if you have a shock collar, that doesn't qualify, or, you know, the bark, like snapping, any kind of mechanism where you don't actually have a leash attached to the dog. So any person who's under custody of the dog found unrestricted would be in violation. If the owner can't be found, then the dog could be impounded, similar to the running of large ordinance. And there would be a small civil penalty for violation of the section. So next slide, please. And so there were exemptions that I saw in other ordinances. The obvious ones are service dogs. A lot of service dogs are not on a leash, obviously, because of the function, the service they provide for the person. Law enforcement dogs, and then also dogs within county-designated off-leash trails, the dog park and exercise areas. So Aaron and I discussed there would actually be signs up that say, okay, now this is the off-leash trail. This is where your dog has to be on a trail, on a leash. Because right now it is a little confusing looking at the signs where that line is. So I think the signs should be a little better if the board decided to have a leash law on certain trails there. And then also county-approved events, like if they ever held like training, I think they do some of the training classes.
We have a dog training class at the community center in the dog spot.
Or if we
but they are leash.
Agility training, field trials out there, something like that, as the parks unit use in the future. Next slide. So right now I have it as a violation would be $25 for the first offense, $50 for the second offense. And I know we did receive an email from Captain Peterson, and he did have kind of
sheriff's here.
I know he had concerns about, since they only have one animal control deputy, you know, if they had the, you know, the manpower to actually, you know, enforce this was his main concern. And was there, you know, was this really an issue? Because a lot of times these bites, they don't get filed in the CAD system. They get reported to Aaron and Parks and Rec, but they're not actually filed with the deputies and they don't enter CAD. So the sheriff's office isn't seeing the reports. But I don't know if the sheriff wants to speak or Mayor Animal Control Deputy Strong is on Zoom if she wanted to speak as well.
Sheriff's heading this way.
Everyone. As far as the dogs in the park, it's something that we've talked a long time about, and you know, even back when they do some of the running events over there, it seems to be a problem when they're running at large. Nobody really wants to try to encounter a dog, whether you're walking, whatever, that you don't know. I think it's a good idea. The enforcement part of it, we'll do our best. However, if we work things out, and you know, we'll do what we can. Just like putting the gates up has really helped out with folks going down, tearing up fields and stuff like that. Sometimes you have to adjust the way you do business to accommodate the better good for everyone. So, any questions or anything from us? But whatever we work out here, we'll do our best to enforce and help out in any way we can.
And Deputy Strong, do you want to add anything to the comments about your experiences?
Yes,
so I mean, I will say I have had some dog reports of dog bites in the last couple of months. It has been mainly around the library. People let their dogs out of the car and they just run. When I approached one citizen, you know, they came back with, well, there's no run at large law in the county. The last citizen, I said, we do have one now. It has to be controlled. Some citizens, you know, we want to make sure that they can still go to the park and play and let their dogs run. It's a great thing we have for our citizens. I don't want to take it away, but it does need to be controlled some before something bad happens. And like the captain said, we just want to make sure that people understand that deputies can't be there all the time. We are short-staffed, and we'll do the best we can. And you know, just try to figure out something to prevent a major catastrophe happening. Some citizens have reported also they're scared to walk the trail because they're scared of dogs. Some people are just scared of the dogs. And they don't feel comfortable walking because dogs are running without any control.
Again, the nice thing with where Aaron has the line there, it's a pretty specific area that's really kind of segregated from a lot of the other area of the park. It's got kind of one defined entry point from the other trails besides just kind of coming in from the dog park area. You know, it's certainly a change in the amount of off-leash space that we would allow, but at the same time, too, we certainly don't want to, we don't want to detract, or we don't want to make it so people don't feel comfortable going to the park because you got people that are not controlling their dogs. I mean, it's... So.
And it's not all of them. Yeah. You know, it really isn't. It's not everybody that has their dog off-leash, but... Unfortunately.
That was the one thing that hit me when you read the $25 first offense. If we inserted the word manual, like the kid would know the
word.
If somebody has an accident, you know, they have an accident, but if somebody's a repeat offender, then they need to be hit every time.
And my two thoughts. One is the more dogs that you concentrate in an area, the more likely there's going to be an incident. So I understand the objective of trying to make a delineation point, but I think you're just going to concentrate a lot of dogs off leash in one area. More likely to see, you know, animals fight. When animals fight, owners get involved, and when owners get involved, so maybe something like that's really from that. And then my second thought on it is, you know, that front field right off of 53 right there. I know a lot of times you see, you know, people hanging out there. I never see a whole lot of people there unless there's an event. But, you know, maybe they're flying their kite or they're just sitting there for a picnic or something along those lines. And certainly having another large field that is dog friendly might make sense. But, you know, I haven't looked that closely at the trail entrances to those fields to be able to say anything. But that just struck me as kind of one of those places where you think of, you know, people first coming into the park and sort of just relaxing and being there. It's enough of an open area that if you're afraid of a dog, you can go to the other end of the place and sit somewhere else if you want to.
And me and ACO Strong, we thought about that too when we were talking about where to do it, but we thought it might be confusing if you're letting people use the front of the park and then everything else. So that was one of the reasons why we kind of did this.
And I get that. I think a lot of people that go to the park on a regular basis, they learn what are the areas and are not the areas.
Well, we could get banners and signage and stuff like that to educate people.
Those are just my two thoughts.
Thank you.
Wouldn't it be more difficult for your staff if you had more than one place?
Or
would it be more difficult for your staff?
No, I mean, if it would be in the front fields, I don't think so. I mean, if they're going to take them off the leash, they're going to take them off the leash when they get on a trail, I think. You know what I'm saying? We were just trying to help make it easier for people to understand. That's why we concentrated on the dog park. That's why we thought we had a dog park. There's open space down there to run. So that's why we kind of concentrated on the dog park area and tried to take out a Pleasant Grove altogether because of the events and stuff. Because, I mean, if you leave it open, you still have your cross-country and stuff coming in, and you're technically leaving that where everybody parks, but that's technically off-leash, so it makes it a little difficult sometimes.
Now, at the dog park area, you still got, I guess, 5-6 acres.
You got the hill. And
they got all the open field to the right also.
And over the hill down towards
all that's open.
That's why we thought that would be a good open area, because it's quite a bit of area down through there where you could spread out.
Another idea would be to make certain trails, and I know that you don't necessarily do that, but maybe like the green trail is the dog trail.
So it goes in a straight line all the way through?
Yeah.
I think if we do it, I always call the citizens and the taxpayers our stakeholders, our stockholders, and no organization can function without them, and we all work for them. So be it Parks and Recs or police or whatever, there's going to be confusion. There's going to be history of them having done it. And, you know, when you're on 900 acres and there's a sign, there's a good chance you might have missed a sign. And so I just want to be sure that whatever, if we go through with this, that whatever we do is in a way of understanding that these stakeholders there's going to be some mistakes and some confusion and dogs run off, and that we treat them in a ma'am and sir type of way to say, hey, we understand there's some changes. Hey, I know it's a big place. You know, just letting you know we've made, you know what I'm saying? I just want to make sure it's, I want to make sure it's warm and considerate of the fact that they're the people that it's there for.
Well, that's, we currently do that with the issues that we get. We try to talk to them, explain to them what's going on, and, you know, how we can try to get better at it. So we're always trying to get better every day, and we don't want to keep people from our park. That's what we're here for. We're here for citizens to get exercise, to get out and do stuff. But we also need to make sure we're keeping in mind some of the safety stuff. Yeah. So that's where some of this came in. People were starting to get bit on trails, and that's why I'm here. I wish I didn't have to be here, you know what I'm saying? I wish, but we have a lot more stuff going on in the park than we used to. You know, 5 years ago, there wasn't half the stuff that we got going on in the park now. So the park is changing, you know, it's getting more use of the different functions. And I mean, we have bike races that we never had in the park. We're having, you know, 5Ks and stuff that we haven't had before. So we are expanding and doing more stuff in the park. And when you have those interactions and stuff.
I think that's why I was talking about adding the words "may." This is exactly what you're talking about. Instead of saying it's automatically going to be a ticket the first time you call it, give people an opportunity to say, oh, okay, we didn't realize that, we'll move over here.
Yeah, well, another option you could do, like we did with the running a large ordinance, and have the warnings first.
Good.
Running a large ordinance, we say you get 2 warnings first.
Yeah.
Before there's actual penalty. So you could have the same language in this ordinance, that, so that it has to be 2 warnings in the CAD system before they actually get penalty.
And another caveat to that is to do a 30-day grace period and start enforcing it, but just verbally.
Yeah,
and that would give a 30-day period where people could become acclimated to it. If you want to add the twice warning, whatever y'all want to do, that's fine. Just tell us what you want.
I like
to
tell
you. But nobody's going to go, you know, and give somebody a hard time the first time they're gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, dog, like Mike said earlier, dogs are going to get off a leash. They're going to take off on you. They don't always listen.
And it boils down to, you know, getting the word out too a little bit. I mean, certainly, you know, it's, I don't think if the board move forward, it's a hard line and
sure.
It's getting the messaging out, getting it out from the, you know, those that look at the different social media sites, and then maybe some signage.
When I have my trail guy that's full time now, so he's always out on the trails interacting with people. I mean, he's there to educate people and talk to them and explain why we're doing stuff.
Have you ever had the dog park with too many dogs where people have left the park because there were too many dogs?
I have heard over social media that somebody brings 4 dogs in there, and technically you're only supposed to have 3, they can't control them, so people are leaving sometimes. Mm-hmm. But personally, I've not been told that.
Okay.
But there have been fight issues there too that I've heard of, mm-hmm. that dogs are getting into it. But I mean, it's the dog park. I mean, that's the risk you take going to a dog park.
And sometimes, I mean, back in the day, I used to bring my dog there a lot. And so, you know, you've got 3 separate sections to the dog park, too. You know, you got the kind of the big area, the front area, which is a little larger, more open. But then you still got 2 other areas back there, too. So if someone wants to not be in the big area with where a majority of the dogs probably go, there are other areas to go in the dog park as well, in the gated areas of the dog park.
And I think we have a lot of people that they meet breeds there, you know, like there's a pup day at our dog park and stuff like that. So, you know, it's used greatly, but we just want to make sure we're being safe for everybody.
So we decided to have 1 warning or 2.
My only thought about 2 was something like this. How often are you going to catch somebody when they're off leash? And if somebody's abusing it, just to have the opportunity to go ahead and say, okay, here you go.
So I'm confused. You want to, or you don't want to?
I don't know if we say 2 or just put the word in there, may.
I think it's a relatively,
it's small. It's minuscule.
You know, yes, you have your field, your park guide there, and sure you're gonna have some of your regulars there, but you're gonna have plenty of irregulars as well. And my guess is that it's gonna be very difficult to come back and say, oh, yeah, I remember 6 months ago, you got a warning here, or something like that. But ultimately, this just becomes the people that are there say, hey, you know, this isn't, you know, you gotta have your dog on the leash here now. I think it's something that people become aware of. And the people that aren't going to follow it, because the risk of somebody coming up to them and saying something is pretty small.
Hey, Sheriff, this one's for you. He's got his guy on the loop doing it. Could that person take names and report him to y'all?
Well, in-house, they could probably keep some kind of a record for the verbal warnings, and that way it's written and documented. And then if there's another encounter later, we can say, well, we've got it documented right here. You know, we told you, you know, 3 weeks ago, we told you again last week, you know, or whatever.
At least it's
documented some way, whether it's written or, you know, create a spreadsheet.
Yeah, we would keep something. Yeah. They give us license plates, making car models of the people when they get out of the car and stuff like that. We get descriptions of the dogs and the people.
Just making sure that's acceptable for y'all. Would that be able to work? Part of the, like Chris is talking about, the two warnings. No, because I find it's going to be really hard for deputies to be there and catch somebody.
Right.
I think from an enforcement or a policy or procedural perspective, the two thing seems like to me it's consistent with the other leash law. On the understanding, and it is a different environment, it's not like you're going to somebody's house. You've already told them twice, look, your dog's scaring little kids over here. So on the flip side, I tend to like the May thing where it gives that leniency, but whatever, I'm good. It's going to be a
non-normal
occurrence.
Not everybody's going to like it, bottom line.
Yeah, these are dogs.
Not everybody's going to like it.
We just tell them. We're
going to get banners and stuff, and we'll put it at trail entrances if we do something to really educate the people and let them know what we're doing before we do this.
We
can put them at the library and the trailheads and stuff.
We definitely get whatever grace period y'all want, the 30, 45, whatever you think would be the right thing to do. Maybe a little ad.
Okay.
Yeah, and
just remember, too, with us, I mean, if the board decides to move forward, you got to do a public hearing and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's.
Okay. I mean, I have no problem with it. The only thing I was thinking about is if you go up to somebody and say, hey, it's the leash law now, and they go, like, up yours, buddy. You know, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, you don't have to get two warnings there, partner.
So let's just be consistent with the leash law that we have in place. And say after two warnings.
As long as his guy's warnings count.
Well, the only thing is I'd have to subpoena his guy to court. That was prosecuting it.
Right.
Or if Donald Turner's prosecuting it.
That's what I'm saying.
His employee would have to come to court to say he gave the two warnings that it's not Dan.
Yeah, prosecute it to give them the $25 fine.
If
they choose to fight it.
Like a ticket.
So, one thing I wanted to say that I ran into at the mind at large law, the couple of attorneys for us brought up is having proof that there was that warning. So in other words, like he just said, we can't have a citizen is not going to come to court 6 months later.
Go with it and see what happens. I mean, we can change it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you change, you have to have another public hearing.
You do.
Correct. Even if you change the boundary lines?
No, I mean, the way we'd have it designated would be off-leash trails and off-leash exercise areas. So as long as we're brought up in the ordinance, it is designated areas by Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have specifically delineated trail.
In the ordinance?
Yeah.
Because,
for instance, it's Rock Brook Trail, part of Rock Brook and part of the Heritage Trail would be off-leash, but part of on-leash, you know.
Yeah, which is confusing.
So that's the only part that could be a little confusing.
That's the one. But that's where they intersect and we put that sign.
And so, but you would have to have specific sign right there where Rock Brook and Heritage intersect.
A big sign.
A sign saying, this is where Rock Brook is leash only, this is where it's off.
Maybe a double sided sign, leash dog immediately here and leash off leash after the sign. It'd be a double sided kind of sign. But I mean, it's going to take us a little while to get some signage made and some banners. So, but we would definitely, we want to educate people before we deter them. And, I mean, I, I hate for people from outside of the county not come here because they interact with a dog off a leash, and I've heard that before. So,
and I will say, in the 7 years we had a similar ordinance in Warren, I never took any of these cases to court. It was just more education. Yeah. Because similar, we had a dog park and a walking trail where people were getting bit on the walking trail. And once we put the signs up and had the education, it was just more giving warnings. And I actually never took any cases to court in the 7 years I was there and we had the ordinance. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So are we clear on the warnings? And
so we're doing two warnings, or is that what we said?
I think one is enough.
But I just want to be, if we're going to do warnings, I think we should be consistent with the leash law. So if you're a citizen, you're not confused.
Six warnings.
I'm sorry.
Running at large for Lake Monticello, uh-huh. There was no warnings.
No warnings.
Outside of Lake Monticello, there was two warnings.
Okay.
So if we want to be consistent, we could say two warnings. I mean, it might be easier for them to control that knowing it's two warnings.
Yeah, and it's all, like no. Mr. Spitzer just said, they're going to document it and have it written down.
Yeah, we'll keep a spreadsheet on it.
If we see somebody being consistent about it.
That's something we can share with you weekly or monthly.
So at this point, if the board wants to move forward with this ordinance, again, I think we've got enough information where Mr. Winton would draft the ordinance. So what would happen is that the next meeting, we come back before the board with authorization to advertise for a public hearing.
The public hearing would be in January.
Yeah, the public hearing would be at the second meeting in January, because again, we have to advertise. We have to advertise out in enough time, so we couldn't have it at the second meeting in December. And since we have public hearings on the second meeting, it would go to the January meeting.
Anybody who has to have two warnings need to not be able to come to the park hearing. Really.
We're going to start educating people. Right away, you know, it's coming. We'll let them know it's coming. Like this, you know, if that's what you want us to do, we want to educate people. So as we meet them,
we're not trying to keep you from being able to do this, but we want to have everybody be able to have an enjoyable time at the park.
Yes, we're not trying to exclude anybody.
And like I said, my biggest thing was, as long as they're nice about it, okay, put it back.
Okay,
so
are we clear?
Yep, I think we've got clear enough direction.
Thank you. Yep.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you, Dr. Short-term rental ordinance.
Yeah, I'll start the first one, and again, just give some, just a little refresher. Again, we don't have a short-term rental ordinance. Fluvanna County permits rental homes to tourists as part of the home occupation zoning ordinance definition. And again, the home occupation definition is summarized as an accessory use of a dwelling unit and or accessory structure for gainful employment involving the production, provision, or sale of goods or services, which is clearly incidental to or secondary to the residential use of the parcel. And then again, home occupation shall include the rental of rooms to tourists. That's what it is currently. Home occupations must be conducted in accordance with applicable federal, state, and local statutes. And again, currently what it basically says is the maximum floor area permitted for a home occupation shall be 25% of the finished floor area of the dwelling unit, taken from section 22-17-19, home occupation, which basically limits 25% of the home. So currently, as it stands right now, the short-term rental of an entire house is not permitted. And so, you know, that's kind of where we're coming back for. You know, we've had this discussion that we know there are short-term rentals out there, we know there are entire houses being rented, and so this is just to kind of put some provisions in place and put some safety measures in place as well for those that are doing this.
So, and it's, I might have missed this. So the entire house is irrelevant to square footage, right? So if you had a 500 square foot cottage.
Yeah, right now you can't do it.
You can't rent, yeah, but
correct.
I'm going back to the tree house.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it. Who's gonna tell somebody that they had to rent one bedroom of the tree house?
It's not their house.
That's an accessory dwelling, that's not a primary dwelling.
Yeah. That's not allowed right now.
It's not allowed.
But we've been allowing.
Yeah, I mean, we are allowing it, but it's not under our current ordinance. Not allowed.
Yeah, what we would propose, I mean, again, and Dan will kind of talk about the ordinance piece. I mean, you know, I think we kind of looked at some other draft ordinances and getting direction from the board last time. You know, we're not trying to put like these tight parameters in place. It's leaving it open, but it's having some parameters in place to do it.
So, I was under the impression last time that we were going to kind of move forward with what we talked about.
Well, we were, and so all we wanted to do is we didn't want to come forward with not having an ordinance. So we have kind of, there's a draft ordinance in the package for the board to consider. And so as long as the board doesn't have any major changes with that draft ordinance, let me have Dan go over kind of the ordinance piece.
So yeah, we talked about this last time, basically short-term rental. You know, it's renting a room or space for less than 30 days. So it could be, you know, a whole house or a room within a house. We talked about the platforms, Airbnb, VRBO, where there's already rentals in Fluvanna County, if you look at Airbnb or VRBO. So two options, you can have a rental registry, where there's an annual registration administered by the county, and basically the county can charge a reasonable fee or levy a $500 penalty if the person fails to register, and you can prohibit the rental of a unit that's not registered. And you can prohibit rentals where multiple violations have occurred. The disadvantage of the rental registry, next slide please, is that it doesn't apply to individuals licensed by the real estate board or a property owner who's represented by a real estate license or timeshares. So it doesn't apply to every short-term rental within the county. And so obviously the registration ordinance wouldn't supersede declarations of property owners associations like Lake Monticello where short-term rentals are prohibited. So the other option is regulating it through a land use and zoning authority. And so what I propose, I looked at Louisa County, they just considered a short-term rental ordinance in the past few weeks. I looked at Alamar County, I looked at the one I drafted years ago when I was in Warren County, and looked at all the other surrounding localities. And basically what I came up with was to allow it by right in the agricultural and residential zoning districts. What's interesting, Louisa, they were also allowing it in the commercial districts, which I thought was a little, I guess maybe if you had a business or an apartment above a business, maybe that's what they were thinking.
Or you could see downtown Louisa having a little.
Yeah, we don't have that much of that issue here where I think it's necessary in commercial.
We put that 10-story building.
Yeah, 10-story, yeah, like they're doing at Ivy, on Ivy Road, that's,
yeah.
I saw that. So basically the definition, it'd be a single family dwelling, not attaching our dwelling and rented for compensation less than 30 days. So this would not be for accessory dwellings. It wouldn't be for detached garages. It wouldn't be for tree houses. This would be for single family dwellings. And so I created supplemental regulations. So because you're not requiring a special use permit, you're not to have conditions. So I thought we should have some health, life safety regulations basically to protect the county and protect the citizens. So, next slide. So there are a lot of conditions and regulations here. If the board wants to remove any of these, that's fine. These are just ones I saw in other localities I thought could be helpful. So the first one, the main, was basically saying, if your HOA prohibits short-term rentals like Lake Monticello, then the short-term rental is not allowed.
Can I stop you there? Why do we care about that, whether Lake Monticello is good with it or not? Why isn't that up to Lake Monticello to regulate?
Well, they would have to call an injunction or, I just think it's easier for the county to have a regulation saying that, but we want to leave it up to the HOA to do it. It's just a cost to them to have to, you know, take that person to court or if they have a fee structure. I just thought it was easier for it to have a regulation saying if they don't allow it and
can't do it.
But if
and don't allow?
Couldn't any subdivision in Fluvanna County put the same thing in place? So Fox Hollow.
Sure.
Fox Hollow?
They have an HOA.
Right. So
yeah, they could have covenants that say you can't rent
so
out.
So if they adopted a covenant, then are we then going to enforce it for them? Why are we doing it for Lake Monticello? Don't we open ourselves?
It's all HOAs in the whole county. It's not just like Monticello. Any HOA or BOA.
We're using that as an example.
For instance, Cunningham Meadows, they don't have an HOA, so they don't have restrictive covenants prohibited. So it'd only be neighborhoods where there's an HOA or BOA, the way we did it in Warren County, I didn't think it worked very well, as they require a special use permit for every short-term rental. and we had to get a letter from the HOA whether they wanted it or didn't want it. And I just thought that was really a cumbersome and an administrative process that really added a lot to it. And then, so I just thought it'd be easier to say if the HOA does not allow it, then the county doesn't allow it.
But I don't mean to argumentative about it, I'm just trying to figure out if that's a private entity's policy or rule, why are we getting involved in the enforcement of it? Or what, I mean, they already have something in place, and if they want to enforce it, let them go through the cost to enforce it. Why should the taxpayers of Flavanna go through the cost to enforce something that's an anomaly?
No, I mean, it's a valid point. Does it open Pandora's box for other enforcement? You know, items that may be in Lake Montchell's restrictive covenants where they don't say, well, can you go enforce this? Can you enforce this?
I
know in the neighborhood I live in, we don't allow short-term rentals, but I know there's a short-term rental in our neighborhood. But, I mean, I could go to the HOA and say, go after them, you know? I mean, so I don't know, does it open Pandora's box where they're all, you know, different HOAs are all asking us to help them with our zoning, you know, to enforce their restrictive covenants?
Going to court looks much better when it's somebody else paying for it, you know what I'm saying? So I don't see why we would want to. I would suggest we take that out.
I think it creates some confusion for myself if you don't have it in there. I mean, why are we sort of having, yeah. I mean, I see your point. Yeah, I do see your point, but I also see that, you know, basically, if there is a ordinance in the county, why are we making the HOA having to enforce that separately on their own if they already have it in their own place?
Because
a lot of times HOAs are, you know, prone to having their own issues in terms of management. Right?
I mean, I'm saying we're putting a blanket policy across the county and going, dear private organization, we see you have your own rules and we're going to enforce that for you. Why? If they already have the ability to enforce their own policies and procedures.
I see your point on it. I do. My understanding is that Lake does monitor that pretty closely. So.
It does?
Well, here's my question. If we don't put a covenant in there, are we opening ourselves up to anything?
I think it just gets confusing if it says this is a by right use in the county code. And so the person will have to say, well, there's restrictive covenants in your subdivision, so your HOA could enforce it against you. We're not going to be enforcing it because it's a by right use. But so it could be confusing to someone who moves to the county, sees it's by right, and thinks, well, that must be superior to my HOA covenants. It's allowed.
Didn't we do that with the leash law? Didn't we allow Lake Monticello to not allow?
We have more restrictive.
It's still more restrictive in their part.
So Lake Monticello or a subdivision, we're talking about being more restrictive in whether you can do Airbnb.
I see both points. I see his point about it being, you know, maybe somewhat confusing. I think what makes Lake Monticello maybe somewhat different is sheer nature of its size, right? But I get your point. You know, I'm not going to fight too hard over it.
So where are we?
I think we should take that piece out.
We are.
That's fine. So we'll go on to the next one. Basically, the owner shall provide contact information to the planning and zoning department for either the owner or if they have a property manager. A lot of these have property managers that manage numerous Airbnbs. There should be no visible evidence of the short-term rental other than, how about allowing one identification sign just so people aren't going to the wrong house? Because I've seen it happen a lot, especially in rural areas where it's a private road and they think it's this house because their Waze is not working or Google Maps is not working. So I thought maybe a small sign just to show this is an Airbnb. But that was just an idea for consideration. And the max would be 4 square feet. The owner shall provide the noise ordinance to guests as part of the rental contract. Outdoor burning and use of fireworks would be prohibited, so basically no fire pits. I know my cousin who has an Airbnb in Albemarle County has had issues with illegal fire pits, and it's an old hay barn, so that's why they stopped allowing fire pits, because basically people from out of town, oh, I'm just gonna throw a bunch of wood in here and have a big bonfire. So just a thought to not allow fire pits, but that's, like I said, that's up for discussion as well.
For me, especially in a rural setting, I think if the owner has, it's the owner's kind of interest to make sure that the fire pit's not going to burn their house down. I'm not saying that there aren't stupid owners out there, but it seems like part of the appeal of coming to the country and being in the Airbnb area is that you can sit by a fireplace.
So we can say that she's a fireplace.
I would make that, no outdoor burning except in designated fire pits areas. The property owner.
But you'd be amazed how sometimes you get uneducated guests who just think
we're in the country, we're the burn zone.
Yeah. So I think that makes sense. If you have designated areas, then must comply with all health department regulations. So I added language basically that the maximum number of occupants shall be determined according to permit approval. So it's a 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom house. However, the max is 10. I know there's a rental on off 250, and they charge $1,100 a night. It's like a 6 or 7 bedroom house. So they might object to a max of 10. So I threw that in there, but there might be bigger house. I think it's like a 7,000 square foot house. So I didn't know if he wanted to have a max number of occupants or if he just wanted it to be based on the permit approval.
I think it's a great example. I didn't know that it exists. I'd like to see the house.
It's a large, I think it's assessed at $700,000 or $800,000. It's a pretty big house.
But I would, that's one where I'd almost feel like it, with the same concerns you seem to have, of let's see if something happens. If you put your hand on the stove, then let's see if we need to react to it. But I could see if you're getting $1,200 a night based upon the size of the house.
Put as many people as you can get in there.
Well, and maybe one of those things, maybe you have a big group of people that are coming for a football game or something.
I was going to say, I was thinking it's pretty great. I remember going to Fort Lauderdale, and I went back to my hotel room, and there were 17 people in there.
Well, was that college?
Yeah. That's a long time ago.
Well, a little bit, too, and this goes back to, the property owner themselves may have certain limitations for the amount of people that they want. Obviously, if it's a 3-bedroom house, they may not want 25 people staying in the 3-bedroom house.
Right. So we can remove the
farmhouse. Now it's pretty empty with just the husband and I, but we have 10 grandchildren and 4 kids, so when they come for cousin camp, it fills the place up.
You just can't charge it.
No.
He didn't want to say the name, but that's the house he's talking about. He's got $1,200 when they call for cousin camp.
So maybe we need to take the number out.
I can take it. It's basically based on health department approval. So if you have a 7-bedroom house,
then it was allowable by that.
If you look on Airbnb, it's an interesting house because they have tons of like bunk beds and twin beds. It's set up for a bachelorette party or people coming for a football game. Or
doing some wine tours, maybe.
Wine tours, yeah. It's a pretty nice house.
I'm going to circle back to the first one, and the only reason I'm doing that is because that occurred to me that if we're going to do registration, that's a pretty easy stopping point right there. The house is in the lake, can't register. And there's no real question about it at that point. Because if we're going to do that, if we're going to basically say that the owner's got to register, which we didn't talk about that. That is one of the line items, so.
Well, that was the first set of line items.
That's an option. We could have a registration ordinance, but there's certain exemptions. Or we could just have, look through land use and have supplemental regulations.
So what are we saying? I mean,
A or B.
Yeah, those are the two options, having the registration ordinance or having it through land use and having it by right of supplemental regulations.
Which would be all these right here on this page, correct?
Correct.
If If you...
I'm sorry, I'm missing something. I don't see where it says it's by right.
That was in the...
The previous one.
Right here.
Okay. Basically, it's by right in the district in each of the residential zoning districts.
Right.
And then the definition of short-term rental.
Okay, that clarifies.
And then you have the supplemental. Where if you had a registration ordinance, it's basically allowed everywhere, and you just register with the county planning department.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So under the by right, it would simply be A1, right?
A1, R1, R2, R3, R4.
Or the board says we don't want it in certain zones.
That's the way it is. And right now it's only single family dwellings. So for instance, you can't rent out Flame Circle. You can rent out an apartment there. Uh-huh. That's not a single family dwelling.
Right.
So, or like, because that's our...
The town has behind the CBS.
So Marina Point, you could not rent out there by our code, but the rest of Lake Monticello, you could by our policies, right?
By our policies.
Because Marina Point is not single family.
But they have the HOA covenants that says they can't rent them out.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Just by our policy, you would not be able to rent out something at Marina Point, but...
Because it's attached.
Yeah.
Because it's always attached as well. Under the definition I have in there.
Yeah.
You couldn't, it wouldn't allow townhouses, apartments, condos, anything where it's attached to all duplexes.
Okay, so.
So there's one more page, actually, of regulations.
Okay. Parking.
Parking basically has to be in driveways or other designated approved parking areas. So there's not people parking in the right of ways and yards. If they're trying to park 17 people at the house.
like the race in Richmond. Those guys make a fortune every time there's a race because they park 15 cars in their yard.
Yeah.
But they charge like $300.
Property boundaries have to be marked. This is more for rural areas where people want to go explore and they see a lake in the distance and they want to go, let's go see the lake. That's really not on the property. So that's why I added that. Dwelling has to comply with all state building code, safety regulations. And there has to be a fire extinguisher in the kitchen and cooking areas and smoke detectors in all locations. It's identified by the building code and carbon monoxide detector on each floor. And then the owner shall register the short-term rental with the commissioner, I should say, of revenue. And then basically owners unable to meet the requirements shall be prohibited from operation.
So can I ask? Just in the interest of government adding more stuff. So to the second item, property boundaries or limitations within the property's boundaries where guests are allowed must be clearly marked at all times. Isn't it? I mean, it's already not okay to go and hang out on other people's property. So why isn't that two property owners that are side by side and one goes, hey, that's not my lake. Just like if somebody was a renter that moved in for 12 months. If we already have laws and stuff in place, why just add more layers to that?
Here would be my thing for that. If you and I are neighbors, and we know where the property line is, but if I leave for a month and rent my house out each day, those folks might not know where the property line is. So if I don't mark it to say, don't go past this point.
But I'm your neighbor, I'm gonna call you and I'm gonna say, Mike, get those people off my property.
Yeah, but why
have
my cell phone might not work?
But isn't it good to have that written down? I don't think
a lot of Airbnbs will have sort of a guest book where they kind of say, here are the rules of the house.
And the other option is you could say, like, you could have a property management plan. Like, this plan is provided, and each of the guests say, here's all the rules for the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes, like, the lake's off limits. The river down there is off limits. You know, that hay barn down there is off limits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other option. You could leave it up to the owners and property managers to regulate their guests.
But it doesn't hurt to write it down. So.
Well, but it says, this is not it's saying that you must. So suddenly, am I going to go out and put the little white dog flags around the property,
Or a bunch of like little orange poles playing on the trees and stuff.
I have a property that opens up to a 80-acre field. And you wouldn't know where the property line is, and there is a lake right down there. And
yeah,
it would be easy for somebody to say, I want to go walk down and see that lake.
Yeah, I have a pond to split between two people.
I know some folks, if they look down there and see somebody fishing in their pond, it's not supposed to be there.
I mean, most people are going to go.
It's not going to be a happy conversation.
Yeah. But they're going to let them know. I like the thing of what you say about having the list of.
Well, like usually you have a booklet, like if VRBOs, Airbnbs I've rented, there's usually like a booklet you get when you check in, or they email it to you. Here's all the rules. Here's the contact if you have an issue. So that's another option. You could have that in that property booklet. Here are the rules, and one of the rules is property boundaries.
I think what you're saying, you don't have it in here. I mean, leave it up to the property owners and say, here's the rules.
Well, that could be my neighbor's fond of shooting tourists that are on his property.
Right.
Look, y'all are laughing, but I'm thinking about a lady who used to live in Kent's door, and she saw you walk across her land, or near her land when you were hunting. There was a 22 bullet going off over your head. I hate to say it that way, 40 years ago.
You also do it with them, too?
Well, I think it's best to cover everything to be safe than sorry. I don't think it hinders
anything. I think if you had like a GIS picture or something of the nature with the property lines marked, that would make it real easy.
But it's also the kind of thing that, you know, is code compliance going to come around and look at the book? I mean, some of this is common sense, I agree with Chris that asking a property owner to create boundary lines between his boundary and the other boundary is pretty complicated because you don't know what those boundary lines could be.
Are you going to call it a surveyor?
20-acre, you could be on a 20-acre farm, and, you know, where's that boundary line?
I think you're making a big problem out of something that is, in my opinion, is very simple.
Well, you don't
you know your boundary lines. No.
Now, the only other regulation I didn't really address in this separate discussion, if the board wanted to require setbacks from other dwellings. So for instance, in Moore County, we had a 100-foot setback from other dwellings required minimum. So I didn't put that in here, but if the board wanted to require setbacks.
Setback of a building for the?
From yours, from my house to your house. Yeah, say between single family dwellings.
Yeah, say for instance, you and I have a house and we only have 50 feet in between. Well then, I guess both of us can't rent out our property then for Airbnb because the houses are closed.
For instance, like Cunningham Meadows, those houses are about less than 100 feet.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be able to have.
Or the new subdivision over there right across from the main gate.
So I didn't put that in there, but just food for thought if we wanted to discuss setbacks so there's a minimum distance between.
I think what that probably gets into more about people maybe making noise. But then you've got a noise ordinance that says
a noise ordinance.
I feel like less in some aspects is better than this.
So I didn't put it in here.
The more noise, the better.
So you're going to have to come back to it later.
And I think the second one is better than the first one.
What's that?
I think this is better than the registration.
You think the by right with the supplemental regulations is better? Versus the registry.
But we're going to register anyhow, aren't we? Because we just...
Well, you'll have to register with the Commissioner of Revenue, but we're doing it under a zoning authority. We're not doing it under the registry authority, so there's no that exemption language don't apply.
I see.
If you're a realtor.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So
everyone will have
to
register.
You still have to register. It's not registering as much as you have to submit your receipts to the Commissioner of Revenue.
Your business personal property.
And I talked to the state, and they're about to update their transient occupancy tax chart for the whole state. They'll soon, hopefully, by the end of the week, they'll show Louisiana County. And then your sites like Airbnb, VRBO will start collecting that. Because I checked today, and Airbnb's still not collecting that 5% transient tax. So once the state updates the chart, then Airbnb automatically starts collecting that.
They contact me like that.
And certainly, I'm guessing that planning doesn't want to be responsible for all these registrations either.
So basically, they would just register with the Commissioner of Revenue. Now, planning obviously would be doing the enforcement of these supplemental regulations. So if any of these regulations were violated, then planning would be the one sending out the letter and then notice a violation if they didn't comply with the regulations.
or the building official if they didn't
how this kind of came up to begin with.
Right. Or health departments, they're not meeting the health code, the health department would be sending notice.
I hate to belabor this, in part because the shortest agenda I've ever seen is now about to get an hour and a half. But what's the difference? Why a single family dwelling when, again, you have noise ordinances and so on, if you have Marina Point, I mean, those are some pretty nice places potentially to rent out. And why do we care that, or the townhouses at Village Oaks, why do we care that, whether it's single or double?
I say because you're right next to your neighbors, so there's more chances there's going to be party, loud noise. I mean, most people who are staying in short-term rental are going to have a good time.
Right.
And that's why when I was talking to Douglas about it, we thought it'd make more sense for it to be in a single family dwelling. Just the Colonial Circle, I see someone renting out their apartment. You know.
Well, they couldn't there because the federal guidelines of the who has to live there is in place.
I think it's damn dirty.
Yeah, but it'd be illegal. You know what I'm saying?
But like the townhouses there, they'll be building the Colonial
probably
Circle.
Probably not wouldn't let you do that. They're not personally owned, so they're probably not probably with you. Yeah. But the, just you know, to that point, Louisa, when they just passed theirs, to your point, there was the board was pretty divided about it because over at Lake Anna, it's become one of the hottest rental properties that you can get out there.
Yeah.
And you know, neighbors are that you know came to move there to have a quiet living. You know, have people showing up with 25 people coming in and partying all night long and doing all those kinds of things. So it's created a lot of angst among different groups, different interests. They ended up passing it. There's no restriction on it, but
and it was part a 100-foot thing.
They are close together in many cases. Those homes are close together.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much privacy from that standpoint. So you could have, you know, Mrs. Eager living right here, and, you know, Crazy Tony with his 50 friends showing up right next to her.
I've seen them.
Yeah.
Crazy Tony, not the 50 friends. All
right.
Okay, so
I'll tweak the regulations and we can bring it back at the in December. The board wants to advertise the public hearing will be in January. I'll make this tweaks.
So I hear the board is more for the by right with the regulations versus the registry.
I think so. I mean, does staff have an opinion? I mean,
to me, it seemed like that would be the better option to go with.
I think the first one puts more strain on staff.
Yeah,
I shared the ordinance with Douglas and with Jason in his office, and they were both okay with it. They like this version more, and the single family dwelling as well.
How about the commissioner? Did you talk to him?
No, not yet. I wanted to kind of see how this went tonight.
And we're actually, we actually have a meeting,
with them tomorrow.
The commissioner tomorrow about transient occupancy tax.
Okay, so
we might not get out until after Christmas.
Are we ready to move on? Everybody's okay? All right, the consent agenda. Minutes from November the 1st, 2023. B, approval of open space agreement for Janet Green. F, approval of open space agreement for Franklin Keith Jones. Anyone want to pull anything? If not, let's have a motion.
Motion to make.
Second.
All right, we have Mr. Sheridan with a motion to accept the consent agenda. Second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair will sign. That's complete. Unfinished business, Sola.
Yeah, so I just wanted to get a quick kind of some guidance from the board on the organizations and timing to do the next solar work session. And again, as we've talked about, we've got lots of different kind of things kind of creeping up here between different work sessions. So I want to try and maneuver and plan for it appropriately.
So what are we looking for? I thought we were looking for the other side of.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
that's the main thing that we're looking. Right.
So one, I just gave some organizations, and again, that I was not. Yeah, I mean, you know, the Farm Bureau and Cooperative Extension. You know, they and some of the things I sent out to the board, they had some some statements against solar for certain reasons. So, you know, they're reputable organizations, and you know, I thought they would provide a good counter. I know there was the other organization that emailed the board and myself. But like I said, and then just really trying to figure out timing and stuff too. Again, if we're not doing the work session at the December 6th meeting, first meeting in December with the school board, well, we could potentially do it then, or does the board want to do it at a different point?
So one of the things I talked about with Eric, or we talked about together, was that no matter what, and with all due respect to it, I know you all want to participate in it. I know most of it's important to you, considering both of the Biddens are in your district, but they're not going to be voted on until the new board either way. And back to what we're talking about, the school board giving the first presentation over the schools, it just seemed to me that those new board members should be a part of that conversation, because they're the ones that are going to have to vote for it. But I completely understand your concern to be a voter affecting it too. But that's, since it's not going to happen, it's just conversational.
Yeah, and so that, with that, you know, for me, I think when we're talking about specifically, say, a work session, if you have an organization, they should have some qualifications. It shouldn't just be a group that's against something. They should have actual qualifications and expertise, subject matter expertise in it. Because that's what we're looking for from that standpoint. During the public hearing process, we'll get to hear from the public in terms of what their concerns are and what they feel matters from that standpoint. I think if we open up the door to say, any group that opposes something without any qualifications, and we're going to sit down and have a work session with you, we'll have a lot of work sessions with a lot of people that probably is not going to be very constructive.
I agree with that, but I would say, with all due respect to those who presented last time, when we're saying, there are just some things that I would say, I would hold in question, you know, that the soil will be better after 35 years, things like that. It doesn't affect housing values. That was a very...
There's a report that just came out, and what I'm saying is that's okay. Are you a soil expert? You know, have you looked? I mean, that's, if we're going to have that kind of expertise, that's okay. I don't want anecdotal evidence saying it's going to be that way.
But we don't have the evidence or the information we got from the company is correct.
I'm not saying that is necessarily correct. I'm saying that there may be groups that say, you know, okay, you're whitewashing this, that's fine. Here's, you know, again, the Farm Bureau's presentation on this. That's a qualified organization say, we have studied the impact of, you know, soil erosion from, you know, improperly placed panels, and this is the way that looks, and here's what you can expect to happen. Yeah. That's a valid position.
Yeah,
a company that comes in and installs solar panels, they're in the business of doing it.
Right, they want it. Really?
Well, not just that they want it, but they do it, right? But a group that says, you know, oh, I hear that solar panels are polluting, you know, the planet. I'm not happy about that. That to me isn't something that we should be opening up work sessions.
My opinion has been from the beginning that community group that was formed, we should listen to them first. I think that they may not be what you're saying, Tony, kind of certificate, whatever it is, but they do know what the community is concerned about, and they've gone out and they've done the research, and they want to bring it back to us. I would rather listen to them first before I listen to Farm Bureau or to DCE, because they're out there. I know at least one of them's a citizen and has been real concerned. So
I'm not disagreeing that they have a right to speak. What I'm saying is that's what a public hearing is for.
But I think
have we asked them? What do we want to ask them to provide to us, to let them, so they can prove to us that they're genuine? they have some expertise.
You know, this is what I'm saying, is what is, you know, what are your qualifications? Not, you know, here are a bunch of articles that I've read. You know, what are your actual qualifications that say you're an expert in this subject matter? I mean, would we have somebody come in and tell us why, you know, policing is a negative to our community, and, you know, after the sheriff made a presentation talking about increasing the budget for stronger policing, would you say, hey, we're going to open this up to anybody who thinks policing is negative?
That's
an example. I mean, what's your expertise, right?
Yeah. You know, I said when we had them come in that my concern was we weren't going to hear from anybody that was fully balanced. Right. And so if we were going to hear from one side, we needed to hear from the other. And I don't feel like Farm Bureau is in the business of knowing many things associated with solar and some of the concerns. And this is an organization that some of the founding members of it I first met with in Appomattox when they in part led the making it an Appomattox where no solar will come in A1.
Who is it?
So it's in part people from Appomattox, and the Bowleses were involved, Mario Kuhar.
This group that
wants to come. That group.
Okay.
And then when we talk about expertise, one of the Appomattox leaders of that group, if I get some part of this wrong, it's not wrong much, was one of the vice presidents, I think, of Babcock and Wilcox, which is, I think I mentioned, has to be, I think, the largest nuclear testing organization in the world in Lynchburg. A very seasoned person who knows a lot of Babcock and Wilcox perspectives and why they did or did not, why they did not get involved with solar. And he's a very matter-of-fact person who's not going to sit up here and go, you know, bad soil because I read. I understand your perspective, but I think they've even, they create an LLC?
A nonprofit,
yeah, okay. So they seem pretty organized from, again, they've already affected Appomattox. If it's part of the citizens here who live in the Four Kingdom District, if they've developed a nonprofit, they have a VP from an energy company, but maybe it's just because I've had more conversations with them than I'm more comfortable. But I feel like...
And I wasn't against them presenting to the group. No. I was against the idea of their spending equal time because we had another group. I don't think that was the purpose of the first group that came in, was that we were necessarily looking for just one thing. It was brought up by Mr. Sheridan to say, hey, this has an impact on jobs in the area. This is what's going on. This is what we should hear from. It started a discussion, and that discussion was positive. When we were at BACO, Eric and I attended two very excellent sessions. One excellent session, Eric was there, I attended both. Solar was a big conversation on both part of those. When it comes to, say, for example, property rights, you know, and farming from that standpoint, for a family that does not want to continue farming but still wants to own the land, this is the way that they can do that. You know, but you might have a group coming in and say, but I don't want that there. You know, I think this is going to tear up the soil, but that's fine. Buy the land if you want to do that. You know, that's your choice. But there are a lot of communities where farming is diminishing for a number of reasons. And this was something that was brought up in this meeting, was, you know, it's a much more intrinsic problem than just, you know, solar. It's the whole aspect of trying to address the climate change accords that are in place, trying to address, global warming from that standpoint. The fact that Dominion is going to need to put in alternative sources of energy to meet their needs and their demands that they're regulated to do. It's the education of people to get into the farming business. You know, so it was a really interesting group of people that were there talking about it on both sides. And it was very useful. On the second side, you had a presentation about data centers, and part of that presentation about data centers was, well, you know, is solar going to solve the problem? It doesn't even come close to doing it, right? Because the amount of energy that the data centers use and how much they do isn't going to meet that need from that standpoint. So it's just not the entire picture. And they had a representative from Dominion kind of addressing the energy needs that are required for all these projects and how they're then trying to get
what they describe themselves as free energy sources as much as possible as part of their model. To me, that was really useful and brought in a panel, one being the county supervisor from Loudoun County, where they now have 175 data centers, which happened by accident, by the way, because in 2000 something, they inadvertently put in buy right for data centers into their operating plan, and they never got their stuff together, which is how that actually happened, you know. That whole conversation just became this sort of corner piece of all these different issues and all these different viewpoints and sides. And we could talk on for hours and not days. Ultimately, it comes to the board to decide, you know, is this a project that's viable and or good? And is this the right property owner? You know, and what are the neighbors' concerns and how are those being addressed? How does that fall within our comprehensive plan and all that kind of stuff?
To me, with it, and again, God bless him, and I'm a capitalist, with the last presentation being as pro as it was, if we then say that the other side is less than an hour and a half.
Didn't say that.
No, I'm just giving an example. If we say it's less than an hour and a half, if we, with all due respect to Farm Bureau, it is not what they do either. And if I would have a hard time going to citizens of the Fort Canyon District that are facing two utility scale solar fields.
Two in Remo and one in
Okay. Yeah. I'd have a hard time telling them that Farm Bureau is going to be the expert that's going to get the balance of the conversation.
I was not suggesting. I put out there that we should have Dominion come in and talk about it as well, too. There are a number of different people that we should speak to.
But do you think Dominion would come in and speak against any?
I don't know if they're going to speak against. I mean, it's not about being for or against. It's about being educated on the subject, right? You know, a group that is against, you know, say, growth, growth. You know, you're going to have somebody say, "Well, I'm not against growth. I just want smart growth." Right?
But would you say the guys who spoke were for solar?
The people that spoke to us then?
Let me just get this on the chest.
I will never ask this group again if they want somebody to come in here and answer questions.
Hold on.
Get to finish this.
Well, go ahead.
All I asked was, and I asked each and every one of you, he's been around it, he knows the ins and outs of it, he knows the good and bad of it, would you like to ask him questions? And that's exactly how I approached it.
Yeah.
Now, did he come in here and say things that were pro-solar? Yes. He also said things that were, would have said things that were against solar if we'd have gotten into how to actually do the groundwork and everything else. So I wasn't trying to be pro-solar or against solar. All I was trying to do was find someone who could answer questions that I have no idea how to answer. Okay? Did it turn out?
It was good.
That, look, don't say I was, or y'all haven't said it, but I did not ask them to come here about jobs. I just asked them to come here and answer questions because we had no idea. None of us are solar experts.
And I don't think any.
That's all I'm trying to say. Yeah. I have no problem with listening to another group. Yeah. And see also the point that Tony's making, that if we open that up, then we can't say no ever again. But since this group is formed in 501,
C4.
Did we spend 90 minutes with the group?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't 90 because we didn't get started on that. But it was about an hour and 15 minutes. So
I expressed the same concerns, and with, I hadn't even met them before. And it's not a statement about you. I expressed then, I said, my concern is that, again, nobody's going to come in and give us a full balance. There's going to be one side or the other. And I expressed the concern then of that if it came in that way, that we had to have the other side. So I'm not saying anything different than what we said then.
No.
Yet with those same things expressed, this board voted but unanimously to go ahead and have them come in. So there's nothing new being discussed at the table. than what there was.
Mr. Dahl has offered a number of groups, right? And again, I've said I'm not against her coming in to speak. I'm against saying, hey, you get equal time just because this group did. If we're going to listen to, quote, I don't want to say opposite sides, but, you know, issues that you should be concerned about when reviewing Sullivan, okay? We're going to listen to that from different groups, and we should do that from, you know, people that have subject matter expertise in that. Farm Bureau certainly has subject matter expertise on soil erosion, right? Dominion certainly has subject expertise on, you know, the needs and or their demands and why are they pushing for solar or why are they trying to do these things. That's valuable information for us to understand. A newly formed citizens group, you know, whether they've actually even gotten their 501c3 application completed yet or not, I don't know the answer to that, okay? I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that I've spent 2 days in public hearings to hear about a resolution for guns. And I listened to a lot of people.
Resolution what? I'm sorry?
Yeah, the Second Amendment. Yeah, Second Amendment thing. So I know that I spent lots of time listening to citizens talk about their concerns about the Second Amendment rights. And, you know, that's what a public hearing is about. I'm okay with that. I'm just saying, work sessions, we've got to be careful about what we're doing here. You know, this equal time thing is what I'm concerned about. Right? That's what I'm really talking about. I don't have a problem having having them come in to this public, sorry, not this public hearing, to a work session. I do think that in general, we should have a policy that says work sessions should have a certain level of expertise. That's my point.
And also, by the way, as I think I've mentioned to this board, one thing somebody brought to light for me was that the solar companies had a lot of ramp up to get to where they're at. A lot of organizational buildup, a lot of money behind them. A lot of the red flags that are starting to come out at this point are coming out from our level, even. And there's not this effort that has all this expertise and history to it yet. This side of the conversation is more of a fledgling.
Yeah.
I guess I'd make a motion that we allow this group, that we accept this group as the
name
the next,
of the group.
I'm sorry?
Name.
I don't know.
What's the name?
Citizen Defenders of Louisiana County.
Yeah. I would suggest that we have them in as our next presenters. And Mike Goat said it recently, something like I'd rather be slow to the game than too slow to the game than too fast to the game. And you know, if they do a presentation, we still feel like we haven't heard the two sides, then at least it was a citizen organization that's directly affected by this, that I feel does have expertise. I understand the concern of not. So I guess just trying to help us wrap, I would make a motion that we allow, I'm sorry, citizens.
Citizen Defenders of Fluvanna County.
And Defenders of Fluvanna County to make the next presentation.
Present for how long?
Hour and a half.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? I'm going to take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
And chair votes aye.
Is there a date? Do you have a date in mind? I think that was the point of the discussion, was to come up with a date as well, if we have a date.
I mean, maybe, again, it's either within the next two meetings in December or unless the board wants to wait for the new board.
And what goes extra into that conversation is, as Eric and I talked into last week, correct me if any part I'm getting wrong or forgetting, that if we have a board meeting, if we had the board meeting before at 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. In that board meeting, the planning commissioner that would replace Mike Goad can be appointed by the Board of Supervisors.
There's a caveat to this, though. There's some technicalities with. So we
got the new business, right? My question about the planning commission.
Probably yes.
Yeah. By the way, we get to the new business. We're really over past the solar discussion.
Well, I mean,
it's kind of a different
discussion to how we're appointing the planning commission.
Well, my point about the solar was that if we're going to have a round table with board of supervisors and planning commission in the same meeting, then if that person was appointed in the beginning of the meeting, then that person is sitting at the table and the solar.
Not necessarily. Okay. And that's probably the next discussion.
So I would like to make a motion that we invite the Farm Bureau and Dominion to come and speak to us on the subject of solar.
At a different time?
At a different time.
Right. Oh, I don't care about that.
Do we have a second?
That's fine. You know, I'm just saying we can, you know. I want to hear from subject matter expertise.
All right. Do we have a second?
We better put a time to it. Okay. Do we want to, in budget season, do another hour and a half session?
And if other members would like to recommend other groups, I'm happy to hear from them.
Any other discussion on this motion? Any other discussion?
They may not want to speak for an hour and a half.
They may not.
Yeah.
They may not. Okay. And I'm not limiting it to that group. I mean, I think Mr. Dahl put it, I don't have the other folks that you recommended.
VCE.
I just put cooperative. Farm Bureau.
One, yeah, I'm talking about a cooperative extension.
There was some more.
All right, are we ready for the vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Okay. All right. Now, anything else on the unfinished? That was just said one thing right here.
There's just the one thing, yes.
Okay.
So.
I'm not sure if that's old business or new business. I know you mentioned
that's
it.
That's probably.
The thing about the planning commission appointment, that would be new business.
I was talking about the refrigerators.
Oh, that's new business. I mean,
I brought it up before, so I don't
know. We're just going to.
Okay.
They're big. They're like from here to there.
So we now new business. What do we have for new business?
I talked to Calvin about the refrigerators.
Yeah. So we're going to do it.
Yeah.
So, that's
discussion's over, right?
So, discussion's over. Okay, I'll accept that. All right, now we'll go into the second public comment.
There was new business about the planning commission.
Oh, okay. New business about the planning commission. Is this from?
So,
are you doing it or?
No. So if you remember, mm-hmm. So. We got someone that is on the planning commission right now that is.
Mr. Goode's going to take office on January 1.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. Now the issue with this is, and I don't want to say it's an issue. The board's practice has been, if someone when someone resigns, we put that notice out for 30 days to appoint a new planning commissioner. That's been the board's practice. Again, there's no policy, but that's what we've always done. So hypothetically. Let's just say that, because again, Mr. Goode's taking office January 1, so if he resigned, he's going to have to resign because...
Can't we take today's date? Because we know he's going to resign January 1 because he's taking office. As a supervisor, he can no longer. So can't we advertise now, since we know he's going to take office?
Isn't he a supervisor once he goes to the court?
Yes, he's sworn in. So January 1st is when he'd be.
But there's not going to be another planning commission meeting.
They meet after the first meeting of the year.
After the first meeting.
So you're saying we can advertise it even though we know he's not going to be there?
I am saying right now, we have a planning commissioner that has not resigned from their position, and it's not automatic that their position necessarily just. Well, on December 31st, it would automatically.
You can't be a
board
correct.
So can he turn in a letter now that says as of December 31st or January 1st, 2024, I will resign?
Would be automatic anyway, right?
It's automatic.
That's gonna be automatic. Well,
that's what I'm saying. Well, why can't we? We know that's gonna happen. Unless, of course, he passes away between now and then. God, I wish he wanted to pass away.
He would be the least likely member of this board to pass away.
So, I mean, we do have the Planning Commission has 9 public hearings on December 12th. So, the question would be if he submitted his resignation notice now, does that affect any of the votes in that meeting? Or should he resign the day after the planning commission meeting, submit his resignation at that point. I don't think that would be an argument in court, but procedurally, if someone objected, would they say, well, he submitted his resignation notice?
But let's just say this. Let's just say, what's the next planning commission meeting, December what?
December 12th.
So let's just say he resigned December 13th. The board's practice has been, especially for planning commission seats, we put that out for 30 days for when we get the resignation notice. So if we put it out for 30 days, we are only going to have four planning commissioners at the January planning commission meeting. And so the whole solar piece, what we spoke about, there would be no way to have that person appointed for the first organizational meeting. That's, again.
If we did the 30 days.
That's, yes, that's.
Which is not a policy.
It's not a policy. That's been the board's practice.
So there's also the practicality. If there's a meeting December 20th, that's really the only other meeting where this would happen, right?
Do we have to wait for his resignation letter because we know this is going to happen?
He was expressing a concern over if he, once he submitted the letter.
That's what I'm saying. Don't submit a letter. We know this is going to happen January 1st.
Of just
advertise it without a letter.
If the board wants to go that way,
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a policy or on the basis.
Just so we don't go without somebody in that seat.
I am going by our historical practice of what we've done to be consistent. Right. But if the board wants to do something different, we can.
I mean, I think Mike's right on this one. That basically.
Hold on, can we get that on
the record? That's on the record.
Can we get.
Wow.
Okay, for once, Mike, you're right. Okay.
Oh, he said that.
It's on YouTube forever.
But this is the only time.
I would suggest
Chris is never right.
Yeah, but you get sworn in December.
No. He can get sworn in December 31st.
No, I thought it was 10.
No, January 1st.
I thought it was 10.
Not until January 1st.
No, I've always been sworn. I can bring my certificates. I've always been required to get sworn in at a certain time.
You're the mayor of Flip Bama.
In December.
It doesn't become effective.
You're saying be sworn in before the 31st of December?
Prior to that.
No, in December. I've always been sworn in. December. Yeah. Took office in January.
You can be sworn in. You're just not an effective member until the first of the year.
Right.
First of the year, you're effective.
Does anybody have a problem with advertising before he resigns?
And that allows us.
More than a month.
Yes, ma'am, we got
so
more than a
month. We have time to do that, and this is just a process.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he's leaving because he's been elected to the board.
And we're not kicking him out.
No.
We're not doing this to say, hey, we're kicking him out.
Right. I mean, so this, to me, makes sense to advertise now and be ready for the 1st
of January. We will have to appoint a new board member to the planning commission.
Well, I mean,
no, you're staying on.
But not as a
board member.
So
Mrs. Eager might submit her application to be on the planning commission.
You can't advertise the plan commission until he resigns.
We can't. We just haven't done that.
No. How can you?
Dana, are you saying you can or you can't?
You can't. I mean, it's just practice. It's not a policy. It's not bylaws. It's not a law. It would just be changing practice. To be advertising without
getting in the formal resignation.
And the only reason we're doing this is so that that seat doesn't go unmanned or
unoccupied. I understand all that.
Unoccupied for the month.
See how you can advertise for somebody's job.
I guess we look on this Ms. Eager when she went from the planning commission to the board, how it was handled back then.
So here is the
similar situation.
Here is the other thing that Dan and I spoke about. So one, we know December 30th. So let me back up. There are many times on June 30th, like before June 30th comes along, there are expiring terms. So we will bring forward a whole slew of candidates before the June 30th, so there's no lapse in the position on July 1. Now we do that because we know there are terms that are definitively expiring. Now, with this one, technically his term is not. I guess technically his appointed term doesn't expire December 31st, although he's been elected to a different body where his term's going to, if he moves forward, is going to expire December 31st. So again, there's some nuances to this, but if the board says, put it out, we wanna have someone in place, and then the question is, does it go to the board on the December 20th meeting or the first meeting in January? That's the
Planning commission. The position.
Planning commission appointment.
Well, I wouldn't do it in December because, like you said, if something crazy happens and he says, I'm not going to take the Board of Supervisors position.
But it would also make it where, let's say if he wanted to have it that first meeting of January, that Planning Commission member to participate, to be a part of this round table up here, then it would mean that every one of those Planning Commission members didn't have to be sitting down here and then waiting to get there. Oh, it's you. Come on up and here's your...
Yeah, you know, again, hypothetically, 5 p.m., we have the regular meeting, we have the organizational meeting, you know, the board adopts chair, vice chair, and then if there's an appointment for a new planning commissioner at that same meeting, say it's 5:15 on the first meeting, if the board says we want to have the solar work session at the 7 p.m. meeting of the first meeting of January, well, that new PC member would be appointed at 5. We'd have a solar work session at 7. Well, that person's been appointed before the solar work session, so yeah, they could participate.
Come up and join?
Yes.
Well, which I'm good with. That everyone who put their name on this would have to be in order.
Correct.
Unless they don't want to speak.
No. Oh,
or unless
no.
They didn't want to take the seat.
Yeah,
they
but they don't take the seat. You can't, right. You know what I'm saying?
They want the seat, they'll be there.
I'm good with that. That's where I started. Yeah. So
I think I hear from the board, put it out, advertise, and I think I heard put it on the first meeting for January. And then
just do it.
We have gotten one here.
Okay. Are we all straight?
Sure. Madam Chair, one other thing, one clarification on the short-term rental ordinance. I said it would come back to the board, it goes to the Planning Commission. This is a zoning, change the zoning. So I misspoke when I say it comes back to y'all. It'll go to the Planning Commission first. Eventually,
then we'll have a public hearing.
It'll go to the Planning Commission.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't hear what the... What is it that...
The short-term rental ordinance will go to the Planning Commission first because it's a change to the zoning code. So eventually, it'll make it its way up here.
Okay.
But it goes to the Planning Commission first.
Okay. All right. Anything else before Did I do... What did I do? Okay, now make public comment. Yeah, there it is. Now open the second public comments. Anyone like to speak, please come forward, give your name and address.
Don't tell me
and
start
talk to the board.
Too, okay.
My name is James Schoenster, 843 Jefferson Drive on Palmyra. And Tony, you joke, but that is kind of what I want to address. For the sake of my friend Tim here, not hearing from every 501c3 or c4 in the county on for an hour and a half on issues that are important to them, I would really appreciate some clarification on what qualifies a necessary working session from the board. Thanks.
What qualifies a second?
What I expressed earlier is that we should have some guidelines that say this is what we're looking for out of a work session in terms of qualifications.
Okay, did we take note of that? I mean, do we need to expand on that in some way?
We came with discussion during the whole time.
No.
So when you want to...
I say so, right?
No, ma'am?
Yep, I think it's a task discussion. All right, we're going to leave that. Anybody else like to speak? Anyone? If not, I will close the public comment and close.
Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors and enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A7 of the Code of Virginia and Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing litigation, Gate Plaza LLC versus Savannah County Board of Supervisors, Legal Matter, Skill Games, Savannah Rescue Squad, Inc., and Israel Resolution.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion of Mr. O'Brien, second of Ms. Fairchild. We are now closed session.
Madam Chair, I move to close meeting be adjourned to the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convening in an open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hear best of each member's knowledge. One, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the media of Congress under Section 2.2-37A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended.
And two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened or discussed or considered in the meeting.
Second.
Okay. All right, we have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sherrod. Mr. Sherrod?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien? Aye. Ms. Higgins? Aye. Ms. Fairchild?
Aye.
Both. Aye. Chair votes aye. And do we have information?
Ms. Booker, I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the resolution. I'd like a motion we adopt resolution number 38-2023, a resolution approving donation of funds from Fluvanna Rescue Squad Incorporated. Whereas Fluvanna Rescue Squad Incorporated wishes to contribute $8,618.51 in funds to the county, and whereas the county is authorized under Virginia Code Section 15.2-951 and Virginia Code Section 44-146.27C to accept the donation of the funds, and whereas the county desires to accept the donation of the funds, and whereas the county appreciates the generosity of the Fluvanna Rescue Squad Incorporated, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Supervisors of Fluvanna County that the county accepts the donation of the funds from the Rescue Squad Incorporated for the use by the Fluvanna County Department of Emergency Services. The foregoing resolution was duly and regularly adopted by the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors at a meeting of the board held on the 15th day of November 2023.
Okay. All in favor, we have a resolution by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor? Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Do you have another resolution?
I do. I would make a motion that we adopt resolution number 39-2023. A resolution authorizing the agreement between Fluvanna County and Barbara Wright Goshorn and J. Robert Maceda, trustees of the Cynthia L. Morgenstern Trust. Whereas the agreement is among the County of Fluvanna, Virginia, and Barbara Wright Goshorn and J. Robert Maceda, trustees of the Cynthia L. Morgenstern Trust, and whereas the agreement allows for a final distribution in the amount of $125,907.29 from the trust to the county, and whereas the trustees desire to make the distribution to the Department of Emergency Services under the county, and whereas the county agrees to accept the distribution and to apply the distribution to capital improvement purchases for the Department of Emergency Services in memory of Cynthia L. Morgenstern. Now therefore be it resolved that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors accepts the agreement and that the county administrator is directed to execute the agreement subject to approval by and to form by the county attorney.
Okay, we have a second.
Second.
Right, we have a motion. Resolution, Mr. Sheridan, second, and Ms. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye.
I would only comment that we
motion.
That was an exceptionally large donation by a single individual.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And it is so appreciated, and it will go to buy purchase much needed equipment.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
I make a motion to adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn, and Ms. Sheridan. Do we have a second? Say it bigger. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. Anybody opposed? Anybody want to stay here? If not, chair votes aye.